Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Clones, what's going on? Welcome to the Daily Jungle, Thursday in the books. Honestly, it was an awesome show. Three very good interviews once again. Former North Carolina and NFL draft prospect, Naz Jones. San Diego State basketball coach, Steve Fisher, who just retired after an amazing career. Yahoo's Dan Wetzel, who broke down the tragic demise of Aaron Hernandez as we await the verdict in his double murder trial. You're absolutely going to want to hear that one. All of that and so much more. Alvy, roll it now. We'll start with the end of the NBA regular season. We'll talk about the playoffs in a minute, but I actually want to start with the Knicks. I want to start with the Knicks because the Knicks just slammed some lipstick on that pig of a season they had. They won their finale 114-113 over Philadelphia. And after being shut down for the past two games, Carmelo Anthony was back on the court, scoring 17 in 23 minutes. Even earned some love from the Garden crowd, who couldn't help but wonder if that was the last time they're going to see Melo in a Knicks uniform.
Is the chant of Mello. We want Melo.
So there it was. They're wondering, is that the last time we're going to see him in Knicks gear? And they weren't the only ones either. They weren't the only ones wondering what the offseason is going to bring for Anthony. So was Melo, who in the postgame was asked about what the future might bring, and he acknowledged that while he wasn't sure, it was going to be his call.
At this point, it's all on me. You know, I have a lot of thinking and reflecting, you know, to do. And it's all on me at this point. I'm pretty sure the organization have an idea, a thought on what they want to do, how they want to do it. But at this point, it's all on me.
In other words, Philip, when I decide, I'll let you know what I'm going to do. So in that sense, he's right. The decision is all on Melo. But the blame, that's on Philip. Because he's the guy who gave Melo the no-trade clause. He's the guy who built that train wreck. He's the guy who shoved the triangle down the wrong roster's throat. He's the guy who brought in D. Rose and his spaghetti knees. He's the guy that brought in the carcass of Joakim Noah. A guy who was broken down even before Philip threw all that crazy jack at him. 72 mil for 4 years. Only to see him gas out, implode, have knee surgery that ended his season after only 46 games. And now there are reports that he might need rotator cuff surgery too in the offseason. Oh, and let's not forget that 20-game suspension that the league dinged him with for violating the league's drug policy. That actually was the high point of Noah's season. That was the positive. Like, I'm not saying that Melo is without blame here. Far from it. And don't come at me and talk about all his gold medals or that national championship that he won at Syracuse a lifetime ago. Let's talk about what this guy's done lately. Let's talk about what this guy's done in the NBA. Let's talk about what this guy is really about. Not the ring. I can tell you that. Or making everybody around him better. Or leading from the front. Melo is about Melo. And first and foremost, about being the man. And getting his touches, and doing it on the biggest stage in New York. And then he's about winning a ring, in that order. I'm not saying that he's not about the ring. I'm saying the ring's not the thing to him. Once again, incredible offensive talent and a Hall of Famer, but not about the ring. There are about a half a dozen things more important to him than that. And as good as he is, he could have been and should have been that much better. But then again, you know exactly what you're getting when you bring this guy in. So this is as much on Phil as it is on Melo himself. If Melo really wants to win, because he'll tell you he does, if he really wants to win, more than he wants to live in New York, more than he wants to ball in Madison Square Garden, he'll waive that no-trade clause. Because he's obviously not going to win Jack there. I mean, he can't have it both ways. You can't say you want to win and then stay with the Knicks. And he said it himself. He holds all the cards. So what's it going to be? Melo, do you want to win or do you want to be the man? Are you willing to go to a team that actually matters and actually share the ball and play some defense? Or is it more important to you to live and play in New York City and jack it up as many times as you possibly can every single night? Fact is, you're not any younger, you're not getting any better, but you do have value. And there's a much better situation than the one you're in someplace else. Unless this is really who you are and where you want to be. Look, bottom line, I'm not one of those guys who cracked on Kevin Durant for joining forces with Golden State in order to chase a ring. And I won't be either if Melo does it with somebody else. In fact, I'll respect him more if he does. And less if he doesn't. Give me one good reason why this guy should stay with the Knicks. Just one. Because I've been thinking long and hard about it and I can't come up with any. 1-800-636-8686. So, do you think that he played his last game for the Knicks last night? If you were Melo, what would you do? If I were Melo, I'd bust the hell out of there. And it's not like he hasn't had a chance before. Knicks fans, I led the show with you. I'm sitting here in Cali talking about the Knicks. What do you think? Where does he go? What should he do? If you were him, what would you do? And I do think it's pretty hilarious that he rolls out there and says, yeah, I pretty much have the hammer. I'll let the Knicks know what I decide. That's on you, Phil. You gave him that no trade. We are joined by Dan Wetzel. Dan, good to have you back. How are you? Dan, the jury is still deliberating as Aaron Hernandez faces murder charges in the shooting deaths of Daniel De Abreu and Safiro Furtado. Before we get to the details of the trial, Dan, are you at all surprised by how long the jury has been out?
No. The general rule of thumb is for every week of a trial, it's going to take a day of deliberations. Now, obviously, that can vary widely, but you're looking at about a 5.5-week trial, and we're now on our fifth day. So it's in line with that. I will say this, though. If they do not get something by tomorrow and head into it's a long weekend in Massachusetts, I think that would be surprising to me, and I think that would raise the specter of a possible real division in the jury where you could conceivably have a mistrial.
Dan Wetzel joining us. All right, then. Yesterday, Hernandez's fiance brought their 4-year-old daughter to court. What was it like to see Hernandez and his daughter interact in that limited way that they could, given his situation?
Yeah, so it was surprising. The daughter, the 4-year-old, has never been to court before, and this is during deliberation. So Hernandez is not allowed to sit in the court all day while the jury deliberates in another room. He's taken to a holding cell inside the courthouse. So he came up, and at the end of the day, they bring the jury in, and the judge says, you know, where are you guys at? And the jury says, hey, we're done for the day. We need, you know, full day tomorrow. So then they do recess. It's like a 3-4 minute proceeding. And they bring Hernandez in for that. So he was only in the courtroom for maybe 5 minutes when his daughter was there. So it wasn't like they had this long visit. There's no touching or anything. They can't hug him. He can't talk to her, anything like that. She was back in the galley, in the gallery with the other people. But he came in, and the whole scene's heartbreaking. If you've ever been to a murder trial, it's awful. All around awful. There's nothing good about it. And this was just a reminder of it. I mean, she lights up, he lights up, and smiling and waving at her, blowing her kisses. She's all excited. And then within a couple minutes, the Department of Corrections hauls him away, and the little girl's, you know, emotional about it. And, you know, you just see, you know, the devastation of his own family that Hernandez has put himself through. He has this beautiful daughter and could have had a beautiful wife, and they're sitting there like a nice young family, and instead this is how they're doing it. And then at the same time, and even more pronounced, at least to me, is the victims' families. And the Furtados and the Abreus are tremendous people, and they fill a couple rows of the benches every single day. And they would, you know, walk to California for the chance just to see their brother, their son, their friend alive, and just to be able to wave to them. You know, they don't even have that as sad of a moment as it is to see a father, an incarcerated father, or a daughter looking up to her father like that. They don't even get that moment, and it's even sadder for them. And so the whole thing is just, you know, murder trials are very emotional and tough places, and Yesterday afternoon was one of them.
Clones, I have to talk to you about Stamps.com. Listen, Stamps saves you time and money, which you can use to grow your business. I can mail any letter, any package, using just my computer and printer, and the mailman will pick it up. I can avoid the hassle of the post office and mail everything from postcards to envelopes to packages, domestic or international. You can create your Stamps account in minutes online with no equipment to lease and no long-term commitments. Click, print, mail, and you are done. I use Stamps.com because I love how easy it is. I love how convenient it is. I hate going to the post office. I no longer have to. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in Rome. Stamps.com. Enter Rome. Stamps.com. Never, ever go to the post office again. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to the Daily Jungle. Dan Wetzel joining us. He's covering the Aaron Hernandez trial for Yahoo Sports. He's also a New York Times best-selling author. Dan, the key witness in the case has been Alexander Bradley. For those who are not familiar with the case, who is Alexander Bradley?
Alexander Bradley is a self-admitted a drug and gun dealer from Connecticut who Aaron Hernandez befriended, what I find interesting, befriended after he got out of the University of Florida and became friends with when he became a New England Patriot. Alexander Bradley is currently serving time in Connecticut, in a Connecticut prison, on a completely unrelated incident where he shot up a nightclub in Hartford. He's a bad dude. And this was the kind of guy that Hernandez chose to be friends with after he made it to the NFL, which is the really odd part of the Hernandez story. It's not like Hernandez was dragged down by boyhood friends or some gang he couldn't escape or some hardship in his life. He grew up in a two-parent home for most of his life. It's a nice little house in Bristol, Connecticut, basketball hoop in the driveway, a yard you had to rake and mow and things like that. He wasn't in a gang as a kid. He never got in trouble as a kid. He sought out guys like Alexander Bradley after he made it to the NFL. And Alexander Bradley became his friend. Alexander Bradley was with him the night in 2012 where Furtado and Abreu were shot in Boston at a nightclub. And Bradley is basically the key to the whole case. Is he's the one that says, it was Hernandez who pulled the trigger. It was Hernandez who got upset because a drink got spilled on him. It was Hernandez who wanted to do everything. And really, this case boils down to, does the jury believe Alexander Bradley or not? Now, subsequently, and this is a complicated case, so I'm trying to make it quick, but 6 months later, Aaron Hernandez shot, according to Bradley. Bradley got shot between the eyes and left for dead down in Florida in an alley. And he says that Hernandez, there's plenty of evidence to suggest Hernandez was the shooter. That is also on trial here. Later, Bradley recovered and then threatened and was basically telling Hernandez, I'm going to hunt you down and kill you. He was also trying to extort money from him. And eventually, that never panned out because in 2013, about a year after the initial double homicide, Hernandez was arrested for the murder of Odin Lloyd, which he has since been prosecuted for. So there's a lot of incidents and a lot of ridiculous behavior and a lot of violence in this whole crew. But that's who Alexander Bradley is.
Dan Wetzel joining us. One more thought about that, Dan. And you said this, but I want to just kind of reaffirm or confirm this point. Bradley's not the kind of guy to talk to cops, to the point that when he went to the hospital after he was shot in the head and might very well die, he refused to tell the police anything. But one of the things that he said in his testimony was, quote, and you touched on this, quote, I didn't want to talk to the police. I wanted Mr. Hernandez. I wanted his life. So what's it like when you hear a one-eyed man say something like that in open court?
He was literally in his hospital bed, got the room phone down in Florida and called Hernandez up and said, guess who this is? And Hernandez said, who's this? And he says, you know who it is. When I get out of here, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to make things right. You know what's up. And then he later sent all these text messages saying, I'm going to hunt you down. Alexander Bradley sat in a witness stand 2 feet from a judge and said, I wanted to murder Aaron Hernandez. I was trying to lure him to a meeting so I could kill him. it's incredibly chilling to hear. The fact that he survived a shot to his face and had one eye, it was like watching HBO in real time. But you might not even believe it because you'd say the writers stink if they think a guy could get shot between the eyebrows and survive. You'd have a hard time believing that on cable TV. It was real. So he doesn't ever talk to cops. But then because he says he can't kill Hernandez because Hernandez ends up getting arrested for the other murder. In essence, Hernandez's life might have been saved because he murdered Odin Lloyd and got caught. His only way of getting back to him is to pin this double homicide on him. And at the same time, Alexander Bradley has immunity and is not going to be prosecuted in this case. At the end of the day, Alexander Bradley has run a very, very smart... He is a very smart guy when you listen to him on the stand. He's on the stand for 4 days. Very bright guy. Chosen profession notwithstanding. Just has worked this system really well, but the rivalry between he and Hernandez essentially had two guys in a court. If you move the court officers out, they're going to go to the death. That's the only thing keeping them. I mean, Hernandez has tried to kill Bradley allegedly. Bradley has threatened to kill Hernandez.
Dan Wessel joining us. I mean, it's one of the most amazing things I've ever heard. I mean, Dan, certainly you're as good as there is at what you do. There's almost nothing you haven't covered. I mean, I'm hearing this and I'm blown away just hearing you tell it to the rest of us. What's it like to sit there and listen to this and see this and hear all this?
Saying it's like watching HBO it probably doesn't even do it justice. I don't know. There are times throughout the Hernandez, both trials and all his proceedings, you just simply can't believe what you're hearing. I mean, you just cannot believe some of these things, the antics, the text messages they would read, but they're all factual. The testimony, the side characters in this thing. Aaron Hernandez, to me, is the most fascinating story in sports in the last half decade, and it isn't even close. This is a guy who had it all. He caught a touchdown pass from Tom Brady in the Super Bowl 5 months later. He possibly murders two guys because one of them spilled a drink on him. 5 weeks after that, he signs a $40 million contract to play in the NFL, an extension, plays an entire season after possibly committing double murder, then gets the offseason, tries to kill the wheel man of the murder, then has the wheel man try to come back and hunt him down, and then he murders another guy, and is acting completely irrationally, which it now makes a lot more sense because he thinks he's getting hunted down. I mean, that year of Aaron Hernandez's life, there's nothing else like it in sports. People talk about OJ. OJ was retired. OJ, I'm not limiting or devaluing the crime. I mean, two people got murdered in the OJ case, but that was, you know, a crime of passion, domestic violence. We've seen that story before, sadly. We see it all the time. We've never seen a guy who has it all, active NFL player, just being an NFL player during the day and a potential mass murderer at night.
Dan, to your other point, like, what happened to this guy? It's not like he came up the hard way. It's not like he got dragged back down by some bad dudes that he grew up with that insisted that you owe us. You would not be here without us. He came up in a two-parent household with a very nice upbringing. What happened to this guy?
The why will always be the question with him. You know, people talk his father died suddenly and tragically when he was 16, went in for a hernia surgery and passed away, and a lot of things changed his life. But that's not, you know, lots of people, unfortunately, have their parents die. Lots of people deal with trauma. His own brother is a very well-adjusted guy. He's an assistant football coach at Iowa. He's coaching high school football now in Connecticut. Was a star at UConn. That seemed to be the moment things changed for Hernandez, but what is clear is he sought out this kind of lifestyle. Because again, you don't befriend a guy like Alexander Bradley after you've made it. That's the guy you try to get away from when you've made it. You know, he's got a life. He's living with Shayana, his longtime fiance. They dated in junior high. They're living in a huge mansion in the suburbs of Boston. Their neighbors are doctors and financial planners. They got rocking chairs on the front porch and a pool in the back and a baby on the way. You're with the Patriots. It's you and Gronk, and you got Tom Brady. I mean, this is the ultimate dream.
Why would you seek anything else out? We don't see these guys do these kind of crimes. Why would you want to hang out with a bunch of thugs? Why would you want to be involved in this stuff? Why, you know, he would have guns, unregistered guns, stolen guns, when he could have gone down and got his own and as many guns as he wanted. He'd never been convicted of any crimes. He didn't want a legal firearm. He wanted illegal firearms. None of it ever makes any sense with Aaron Hernandez. I think that's why the story's so fascinating. I don't know we'll ever, unless Hernandez someday talks, after all his appeals are done, I don't know if we'll ever get the whole story.
You've done an amazing job of laying this out. Before I let you go, just what about that drink? The prosecution argued that Hernandez was motivated to kill the two men because De Abreu spilled a drink on him. How much evidence were they able to provide to back that up?
Very little. I mean, there's not like a big stain of a drink on any surveillance videos, no video of it. Not a lot of people saw it. It's certainly possible, though. You know, again, the motive doesn't make sense. And I think this is why on this case, you're going to have a very conflicted jury, because there is, you know, there is not a lot of evidence other than Alexander Bradley's word that Hernandez was the trigger man. It also could have been Alexander Bradley. It's one of the two of them. But do you know for sure it was Aaron Hernandez? I don't know. And I sat through a lot of the trial. I don't know. And that's reasonable doubt. So if he somehow gets off on this, I would not actually be surprised. Now, it's low stakes for Hernandez. He's already serving life without the possibility of parole for the other murder. But one of these two guys shot was the killer. You know, which one was it? Again, the idea that someone would have a drink spilled on him and 3 hours later then murder, pull up alongside them at a red light and start firing into the car, doesn't make any sense. And the only reason that motive is even out there is because that's what Alexander Bradley said, a guy who most certainly would lie and say anything he can to get a guy he has openly admitted he'd like to murder.
Yeah, one last thought. Since you mentioned this, I want the listeners to understand this. So even if Hernandez is found not guilty in this case, really, how much would his life change?
Nothing. He's in for life unless... somehow there, I mean, his case will be appealed, his first murder case. All murder cases in first-degree murder in Massachusetts are life without the possibility of parole. But they also are automatically appealed. What are the grounds for appeal? I got a hard time believing the trial was pretty clean, very good judge. He had a very high-priced defense team. Very unlikely he ever wins that appeal and gets out. So he goes back to the same prison he's in all the time right now. And he's likely to die in that prison.
St. Louis.
I want to talk about St. Louis. St. Louis is a proud town. St. Louis, and I was there recently, is a great town. The Cardinals are one of the classiest organizations in all of baseball. The Blues stole an overtime win last night from the Wild. You've got the Clydesdales running around every winter. The King of Beer brewing in your own backyard. That arch is still pretty kick-ass. So allow me, having said all those positive things, allow me now to save you from yourself, because there may not be a worse look than the one that city officials are rolling with right now. The city and the county suing the NFL and all 32 of its teams over the Rams picking up and moving back to LA. Now, let's not get this twisted. I'm not saying that what the NFL did was right. I'm not saying that Stan Kroenke didn't rip a team out from underneath you. But going all Psycho X on the NFL is not going to make that any better. Standing outside in the rain and watching your old gal with a dude who is much better looking, has way more money, drives a much nicer car, and is going to let her live in his much better crib, it's not going to make you feel any better. So while that 52-page document might have a few smoking guns, it might even win a couple of politicians, a vote or two for sticking up for the city, it's not going to bring that team back. Nothing will. And this is not going to be a score one for the little guy. What it's going to be is pay some lawyers fat fees by pushing paper across the table. You're not going to catch Raj and Jera and Stan in some long con. It's going to be 32 NFL owners looking at that FedEx envelope that arrived yesterday, smirking as they slide it into the shredder bin, and then they go back to that big board that counts the zeros that keep flooding into their bank accounts. with all the relocation money that just keeps flowing in. Money that they get for doing nothing other than saying yes. That's the game. That's what this is. That's the way it's been. And St. Louis, you ought to know that better than anybody else.
St. Louis.
Because, you gotta stop doing that, Alvy. Because it's the same exact thing that the Lou did to SoCal when it ripped that team out of L.A. Taking 50 years of history with it for what? A better stadium deal. A move that was just as dirty, just as contentious as when it happened to you. And believe me, when you did win it all, it made it much worse here. It opened up that wound all over again and dumped buckets and buckets of salt right into it. In other words, you're crying about the very thing that somebody that you did to somebody else. So get the hell off that high horse and acknowledge that long before you got stabbed in the heart, you did the same exact thing to somebody else. That's how business is done in the NFL. The house always wins. So do what everybody else does when they get dumped. Put on a brave face, pretend it doesn't hurt, and then celebrate every Rams loss like it's another Cardinals World Series win. You jacked that team from LA, and they jacked it back. Plain and simple. Lots of litigation is foolish and ridiculous, and people looking to get something that they haven't actually earned. But nobody more so than the folks in St. Louis who are looking to sue the league. Stand down. Stand the hell down. I cannot believe that you're suing somebody for something you did yourself years before. I mean, really? That's as rich as it could ever be. Stand down. It's like when I was a freshman in college. When I went to UC Santa Barbara, everybody had a bike. There were tens of thousands of bikes. Bikes and the NFL are very similar, believe it or not. Because when you go to college and everybody's got a bike, you're going to get that bike jacked. Somebody will steal your bike. We all got our bike stolen. Did we go to the Isla Vista Foot Patrol and cry about it? No, we just stole somebody else's bike. Which is what you did with the Rams and now they did to you. You know, so we're talking about scales. Scales of economy. A cruiser that may have cost $80 back in the day. An NFL franchise that may be worth north of $1 billion. It's all relative. Stop crying about somebody ripping your team when you rip that team from somebody else. Just go steal another team. Just like we just went and stole another bike. My guest is Steve Fisher. Steve, it's so good to have you back. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you?
I am great. Is it true? True or false? You are currently in the dentist chair or at the office?
I am in the office of my dentist, and he was so kind as to let me use his landline. I thought I would be here for about 45 minutes. I came in at 9:30, and I'm still here.
My man, you are playing hurt and bucking up. I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks for playing through it. It's great to have you back on. Now, you announced your retirement on Tuesday. I know you're still with the school, but what has that time since the announcement been like for you?
It's been crazy, to be honest with you. I've heard from I don't know how many people. When I went into the press conference, I said I had 175 text messages and over 50 phone calls, and from all sorts of people, from people that everyone would know to former managers and personnel that I worked with. So I've reminisced a little bit, and I have had a great deal of fun doing that.
Steve Fisher joining us. So how did you know that it was time?
I don't know for sure that you ever know that it's time. It's never black and white, but my wife Angie and I, the last 3 years, Jim, we've talked about, do we want to turn it over to Brian Dutcher and have a little more time for ourselves and be really good fans? And it just, when the season ended, we took a deep breath. We waited a week or so before we started talking and talk with both our sons, Mark, who's on staff with us, who I think you know has ALS, and Jay, who lives in L.A., and collectively said, yes, it is time. And I'm one of those guys, once I'm methodical, but once I make a decision, I never look back and say, boy, I wish that I had done differently. So I'm very much at ease with the decision we made and excited about what's going to happen next for me and for San Diego State basketball.
Steve Fisher joining us once again. You know, Steve, you and I have talked about this over the years, but for those who do not remember, San Diego State was not always a basketball power. In fact, the school had losing seasons in 13 of the 14 years prior to your arrival in 1999. So what was it about that school and that program that made you feel like that was a good place for you?
Jim, when I was an assistant, I had, after Michigan, I was with the Sacramento Kings and reunited with Chris Webber, and I loved where I was. But when I came down here, I love San Diego, obviously, everyone does. And I looked at it, we had a relatively new facility, which is now called Viejas Arena, and a great school. And I said, I know we can create something. And our goal was to have a program, and we now have that, and we are immensely proud. And a lot of people had a helping hand in where we came from and where we are.
Well, certainly more than a program, but a power, which I'll get to in 1 minute. Steve Fisher joining us. But Steve, I do love the stories, though. In the early days, when you would go around to frat houses and coffee houses and the student union handing out free tickets to students, and they still wouldn't come to the games, even though they were free. So what were the first few seasons like?
Well, my first year, there were more auxiliary people, band cheerleaders, and people that were there administratively than there were fans. Our first year, we had an announced attendance, I think, of about 1,100, and probably we were closer to 700 people that came to a building that seats 12,414. So I had to be very careful in the huddle. Angie, my wife, said, you better watch your language because we can hear you everywhere in the building.
Incredible. So did you ever imagine back then that you would retire 18 years later with nearly 400 wins at San Diego State, one banner after another, and one of the best home crowds in the nation? Not 700 people, but one of the fiercest home crowds in the nation.
That has been something that has amazed everyone, including me. I really, with all my heart of hearts, Jim, felt that we would win. How big, I wasn't sure, but I knew we would be able to create something that everyone will be proud of. But to have 12,414, and we've sold the building out since 2010 and 11 when Kawhi Leonard was a sophomore, and we went 34-3, and it's been that way ever since. And it's a spectacular, major, major college atmosphere in that building, and it's fun to be a part of it.
Steve Fisher, our guest. I'm going to ask you about Kawhi in a minute, but you won a national championship in Michigan, but you have said that San Diego State is your legacy. What do you mean by that?
I live here now. I've spent more time working at San Diego State than I have any place else. I'm going to continue to be a part of San Diego State, and they're going to keep me on in some capacity to help. I'm always going to have a home here. I'm very proud, and we are very much appreciated for what's happened here. But I said this, too, in our press conference. Everywhere I've been, I have felt so much joy and happiness, from my first high school job to Western Michigan to the great times we had at Michigan with great success. But right now, this is home. This is where I want to be. This is where I'm going to be for a lot longer than the 18 years that I put in already.
Yeah, you mentioned high school. If you go way back, Steve, when you were wearing checkered jackets on the sideline of Rich East High School in Park Forest, Illinois, and also working as a driver's ed instructor, what were the early days like?
Well, in my young single days, and that's when they recruited at your college campus, and we had a lot of us that came in as young singles, and we ran as a pack. I met my wife, Angie. We were both teachers at the same high school. Before I got married, before Angie told me you look like a fool with some of the outfits that I wore, I thought I looked good. I had bow ties that I would wear, and I thought I was keeping up with fashion, but I probably looked like a clown. But she's now got me dressed fairly conservatively. But I loved Rich East. The person, Les Witke, who hired me at Rich East, wound up hiring me to go to Western Michigan with him 11 years later. So relationships have been critical, and they are in everyone's opportunities. And It has been for me.
We're having an amazing week of phone calls from Canada. If you want to get right down to it, let's stay right there. Let's go to Vancouver. Okay, I'll preface this by saying it's Matt in Vancouver, but it's Canada nonetheless. Hey, Matt, appreciate the call. What's going on?
What up, Rome? How's it going, man?
Good.
It's nice to see the human filth of Alberta coming out of the woodwork, man. You know, they come out in the first round of playoffs to get a little taste of it. Now they come out pumping up their muscles, talking like they're Stanley Cup contenders. Let me tell you two filth idiot cities something. The West goes through Chicago. If you guys can ever, ever get through Chicago, it's not going to be this year. Your rookie teams, the filth of Edmonton, man. They're charging $80 to walk through the concourse and watch a team watch the game on a screen, Rome. How ridiculous is that nonsense? What a bunch of trash. It's literally the only place in the world you can go to a nightclub and see people dressed in construction clothes. It's ridiculous. And Rome, as far as Sherman and Russ Wilson go, there's only room in that locker room for one gigantic bag, and Russ has that sealed up for the next 10 years. So Alberta, enjoy your first round playoff losses. We'll see you next year. Oh.
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but rack him. We are joined by Naz Jones. Naz, great to have you on. How are you?
How you doing, man?
Good, bud. How about you? How are you?
I'm really good, man. Just enjoying the process. Just got out of a workout.
Good. In fact, let me start right there. Let's talk about the process. You're now 2 weeks away from the start of the draft. What have you made of the entire draft evaluation process? What's it been like for you, and has it been what you expected?
Yeah, it's been pretty much what I expected. It's been really well. I know just a lot of people had a lot of questions about my medical history. So after I answered those questions and, you know, kind of cleared that air, then everything went pretty smoothly.
You know, Naz, I'm sure you've answered all the questions for them, but I think there are some fans mm-hmm. that may not know your medical history. It's an amazing thing. Mm-hmm. The fact that you and I are even having this conversation and talking about what you did in college and your future in the NFL is remarkable when you consider what you've come back from. Can you take me back to November of 2011? Your high school team lost in the state playoffs. You played a great game. You go home, you fall asleep, but the next morning you wake up and you just cannot move. What do you remember mm-hmm. about that morning?
That morning was, you know, a morning that I could never forget. I really see it like just like it was yesterday. I really just, you know, was getting up to go to the bathroom, first thing you do in the morning, and, you know, I stood up. And, you know, from there, I was just stuck in that spot, and I really didn't know what was going on. So from there, you know, I was just yelling for my mom, you know, my sister to wake up. I just needed some kind of help because I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, long story short, really long story short, you know, I got diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome in December of 2011. And, you know, I think this is year six for me, and I've been going strong ever since.
Naz Jones joining us. Look, I'm not looking, trying to get you to relive the entire thing, but the fact is, I mean, you got mm-hmm. up and you couldn't walk. You literally could not walk. Mm-hmm. And you're telling yourself, walk, walk, walk. Why am I not walking? What's it like yeah. when you're trying to get your body to do something that you've done your entire life and it simply will not respond and you have no idea why?
Yeah, it's really, you know, it was hard for me to understand and really accept at the time because, you know, I thought I was maybe a dream or something like that, you know. But, you know, it's very much reality. And, you know, when you go through something like that, it marks you for a long time and you really learn how to appreciate things more because it really got taken away from me overnight and, you know, with no, you know, cause for, you know, that reaction. So, really, I just, you know, try to live that way and play that way like it's my last.
So what happens is the doctors give you an injection. You finally get there, and initially they have no idea what mm-hmm. it is themselves. They give you
yeah.
the injection.
Yeah, so it took almost two and a half months for me to get a diagnosis. And that's why they call it complex regional pain syndrome, because it's so complex. So, you know, I think after, you know, they reached out to some other doctors, and I was here in Chapel Hill, they reached out to some other doctors and, you know, did some more research and was finally give me a diagnosis. But, you know, it's a long process, but, you know, I just really tried to stay positive through the whole thing. And I think that was just the biggest key of the whole process coming back forward. And really it's been my key to the process with the whole driving is being positive. And just, you know, showing the guys who I am and showing them what I can do.
Naz Jones joining us. And that's what you did, right? So you go through your therapy. You go through your
Absolutely.
Rehab. You relearn to walk. You do all the things you're supposed to do. And then eventually you work your way back onto the football field. And then you go to a yep. football camp in North Carolina. You weren't all the way back, but you did want to show the staff that you were on the road back. Then they offered you a scholarship. At that point, what did it mean to get that offer?
At that point, you know, that was one of the most happiest days of my life. I grew up a Carolina fan, you know, being raised in North Carolina. So, wearing Carolina blue was something that I always wanted to do. So really, you know, through the recruiting process, you know, it was really just getting a Carolina offer because this is where I really wanted to be at. So, you know, once I got that offer, man, I was, you know, I was pretty much golden. Can nobody tell me nothing?
So you get the offer, and then you go there. It's a dream come true. You work your way back. You're a two-time third-team all-conference player. You're now 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. What's it mean to you to be in the position you're in right now, given how far you had to come?
It means everything to me because, you know, this thing could have got me a long time ago when I was 16 in the hospital here. So, you know, for me to, you know, accomplish everything that I did, beat complex regional pain syndrome, beat the odds when it came to being on the field, I can't really say anything, but I'm blessed. You know, a lot of things that's happened to me, you know, is, you know, I have no reason why it happened. So, really, I just, like I said, try to live in the moment and be grateful for everything that I have.
Okay, now the thing is, you and I could say goodbye right now, and that'd be an amazing story in and of itself, but there's more to it. You started your own foundation. It's called Made Men Mentoring, which looks to provide a support system for underprivileged young men in North Carolina by pairing them with college student athletes. Where did that idea come from?
That idea came from my mentor. He didn't come from my mentor, but it was in memory of my mentor. So I had a mentor growing up ever since like sixth or seventh grade. And I didn't have a father figure in my life. So he was the person that I really, really clinged to. And, you know, he kind of accepted me for who I was. And, you know, he always pushed me to be, you know, work harder than everybody, always push myself to the limits and, you know, believe in myself. So having him in my life was really pivotal to where I am today. So, you know, when he passed away last year, I felt that it was only right that I do something, you know, of the same nature that he did to me. And so that's why I created Made Men Mentoring, so I can go out into other neighborhoods, especially in North Carolina, my home state, and get guys to understand their, you know, their worth and get them on the right track to, you know, being a better man.
So you're talking about McGrew Booker, right?
Yes, sir. Yep. Yes, sir, Matt Booker. You know, he, like I said, he was, you know, the most pivotal man in my life growing up. So, you know, when he passed away, it was like my dad passing away. So I really took it hard, but I always understood the task that he gave me and why he gave them to me. So that really just built the foundation for Made Men.
Hey, clones, good looking out. Appreciate you having my back. Thank you for listening. You know the drill. Hit subscribe. Tell a friend, trust the podcast. Check back tomorrow for more Daily Jungle. We will see you then.
The media.
It's how a team connects to its fans.